I am Pierre Lumumba here at the Maruba Dam in Machakos County in the Republic of Kenya in the continent of Africa, and we continue our discussion, and today we talk about African political thought. Some may argue African political philosophy, and some may even debate, is there such a thing as African political philosophy? And I think that is what makes the conversation interesting. Those who argue in that manner take the view that Africa is diverse, and that therefore to talk about African political philosophy in such a broad brush manner is in itself losing sight of the realities of the continent of Africa. And I think that there may be merit in that, because if we look at pre-colonial Africa, there is a sense in which governance systems differed. And one can read writers such as Antachek Diop, who has written quite extensively about pre-colonial Africa, and tells us that indeed African societies differed. The manner in which the Asante people governed their systems through kingship is different from the manner in which the Yoruba did. It is different from the feudalistic system that was controlled in the Buganda Empire or the Buganda Kingdom or the Bunyoro Kitara Empire. It was also very different from the militaristic, feudalistic systems and kingship systems that were to be found in countries such or in places such as the Zulu of South Africa. Very different from the Monomotapa Empire. And all these political systems were decimated when the colonizers came into the continent of Africa and dismembered the continent of Africa. And that is why, therefore, when John Henry Clark, that African-American writes, he says that when African countries regained their political independence, all of them developed or started building their countries on the basis of inherited systems of governance from their former colonizers, and none of them will ever succeed. And one can see, therefore, that when the struggle for independence is won, there is an attempt by the more intellectual leaders who head political parties or head countries to try and have different political systems. And these systems can then be described as ideological orientation. Of course, many of these individuals have had the opportunity to study in Western Europe, particularly in the countries where they who are the colonizers, some, of course, in the United States. And one can argue that they are influenced by those thought processes. They have met the writings of John Stuart Mill. They have met the writings of Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. They have met the writings of Chairman Mao Zedong of China. They have read all these writings, but they are saying, yes, we have interacted with this knowledge, but we hold the view that there must be a different way of governing ourselves. And the one who stands out, or one of those who stand out in this regard, is the Osagie for Kwame Nkrumah, when he comes up with a system of philosophy of government called conscientism. And conscientism is unique because he characterizes it as a decolonizing political ideology. And understood in that sense, what Nkrumah is saying, and I can still hear him saying, seek ye first the political kingdom, the rest will come later. He says that the process of decolonization must start with political decolonization. Once you've decolonized politically, then you can begin to talk about economic decolonization. And conscientiousism is a philosophy that undergirds this. And one begins to see the glimmers of Nkrumah's conscientiousism on the day of independence, on the 6th day of March 1957, when he says the independence of Ghana means nothing if the rest of Africa is not free. And he begins to argue that If we are going to build a new Africa, and Ghana is going to be the model, we must begin to have a model in which we de-emphasize feudal modes of government, in which we de-emphasize the political party as a vehicle of governance, because the political party itself is something that we have inherited from the colonizers. And for that reason, we need a totally different method of looking at our affairs. And there are different ways in which his philosophy can be understood, but he's saying, in order to decolonize, we must take charge of our affairs. And I can still hear his stinging voice in 1963 on the 24th day of May, when he's telling the people, remember that one of the ways in which we are going to immunize ourselves is to recognize the modus operandi of the colonizer. And he says that conscientism as a political philosophy has the ingredients to ensure that when colonialism undergoes metamorphosis and becomes neocolonialism, then it will be met by a political philosophy which is anchored in ideology. And that ideology is in Africanness. Today, I hear the word being used to characterize this called Ubuntu. I am because you are. And that is what sometimes is equated with what people like Engels used to describe as scientific socialism. That in order to have a decolonizing philosophy, it must be that you require the citizen to organize and to conduct himself or herself in a unique way. And that is why Nkrumah, in anchoring his political philosophy of conscientism, he says of Ghana that Ghana needs a new man and a new woman. A woman who realizes that he or she has a duty to his or her country, a new person who realizes that he or she must be ethical in the manner in which he or she conducts himself or herself, a new person, a person who recognizes that there is need to do things that are in the best interest of his country according to his or his ability, and only to expect as much as he needs in order to be a good citizen. In this regard, therefore, you can see that the dominating factor in the Nkrumahist philosophy of political organization is informed by the realization that in order to fight colonialism in all its permutations, and even when it metamorphosizes, not only demands but requires that you have something that is anchored in tradition. And he's already afraid. He's afraid of the fact that if you use Western instruments and Western governance systems, then you are not going to survive. And that is why he, as a transition, argues that multi-party political politics is also inimical to that particular enterprise of trying to build a new African philosophy. And this is his argument. He's saying, whichever African country you look at is an artificial country. It was carved out in Berlin so that you go to Ghana, you find that there are communities to be found in modern day Ghana. Go Ghana, you go to Togo, you find the Moba. You Ghana, you find the Moba. And the net effect is that peoples were split. How then do you create a society that recognizes these realities, but also is sensitive and therefore help the people unite in their diversity? And in order to understand that philosophy, one must then appreciate when Nkrumah says Africa must unite. And he's saying Africa must unite because he is conscious of the fact that Africa is so diverse. That is why one of the reasons why in his political philosophy, he does not agree that we need to redraw the boundaries. That is why in 1963, the debate on redrawing the boundaries is suspended or adjourned to be discussed in Cairo in 1964. And that is why the philosophy of inviolability of inherited boundaries is then informed by this political philosophy on the understanding that Africa is going to unite anyway. Africa is going to unite anyway, and her diversity is going to be one of the building blocks that is going to be used for purposes of ensuring that the African vitality, African diversity, and African resources are used to build this unique Africa. And one can hear him say, once again in 1963, when his political philosophy is still developing, that we must come out of here united. We must have one army. We must have one foreign policy. We must have our resources and use it for the benefit of the people. We must not allow the political formations of Western Europe to inform what we are doing. We must ensure that the people's will, and this is something that is very prominent in the Nkrumah's philosophy, he's saying that whatever system that we have, the people must always have their will given its pride of place. And there is one instance, I think, in the 1960s when he's addressing the military. He tells the military, in this arrangement, the military have no role in the day-to-day governance of the people. They have a duty to defend the country. But if it should become necessary for them to interfere in the political arena, they must do so only for such period as is necessary. You can therefore see that in the conscientiousism philosophy of Kwame Nkrumah, the people are given their pride of place. People participation is at the center of this philosophy. The people's livelihood is at the center of this philosophy. The ability of the new nation to organize ourselves is at the center of this philosophy. It is a philosophy that is informed by the realization that those who dominated before will always try to dominate again. And you can see this sense of urgency when you read Nkrumah's conscientiousism, when you read Nkrumah's Africa Must Unite, and when you read some of his writings from when he's in exile in Guinea. It is something that reverberates with the whole idea of having a political system which is conscious of the realities of the continent of Africa, which is conscious of the realities and the needs of the people, which is conscious of the fact that we are not living in a world where everything is as good as we desire, which is conscious of what today may be called Ubuntu. In other words, it is a people-centered political philosophy, and it is a philosophy which then defines one of the more dominant political philosophies in the continent of Africa. Some even call it Nkrumahist philosophy. We will, of course, as we interrogate other philosophies, be able to see how there is an intersection amongst these philosophies and why they can be characterized as true African philosophies. Thank you very much. We continue with our discussion, and we have started a conversation about African philosophies. Today we have looked at what may be described as the Nkrumahist philosophy of politics. We shall continue again to interrogate other philosophies or other thoughts that qualify to be political philosophies. Thank you, and see you again.